Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Talent Game Podcast. My name's Joe Burridge, and with me today is Olivia Yu. Welcome to the podcast, Olivia.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, fantastic to have you on. And for those who have no idea who you are, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Olivia, based in the Bay Area. Previously led partnerships team at Bumble, and before that I was at King for 8 years, going through the IPO and acquisition with Activision Blizzard.
Wow. Okay, so that there's definitely some stories in there. So getting into games, going out of games into Bumble. Also, yeah, yes. That acquisition, that was huge.
Yes, so, yes. Now there's a bigger one. There was a bigger one after that.
Again, you're right. That was, the biggest acquisition of all time in the games industry. So, a few dollars went into that one. I would love to know, I guess, first question I ask everyone on the podcast, like, what are you playing right now?
I still love Candy Crush Saga, so I will always play, even though I'm no longer at King. And my kids and I, we love Monopoly Go as well. So those are the two big games that we're playing right now.
Oh, strong choices. Yeah.
Very into casual gaming. Games.
Yeah. The mobile games I play with my daughters as well are very much of that style as well. I haven't got them into Monopoly Go just yet, but usually like the hyper casual and casual stuff my daughters love. So, yeah. Okay. Fantastic. So, you mentioned that you worked at King. So I'd love to know how you got into the games industry.
Yes, I've always had an interest in entertainment industry. So that's actually where I got my start. I was working at Disney and Paramount Pictures. So I love how the entertainment industry can have a positive impact on people's lives. And then later on, moved to the Bay Area and I joined King. And mobile gaming is, in a sense, another form of entertainment. So, you know, moving over there, and it was amazing time at King, and we would hear so many amazing player stories of how Candy Crush had saved people's lives when they were recovering from surgery in a hospital. Or there was an amazing player story of the oldest Candy Crush player. She was 90-something year old woman in Spain, and she played Candy Crush on her iPad, and she said it helped her to keep her mind active. So that's what I love, is being a part of an industry that can make a positive impact on people's lives. And then same thing, moving over to Bumble, you know, helping people to, you know, create and build healthy relationships as well. So that was sort of the move as well to Bumble on the partnership side.
I often say, oh, we're not in the business of saving lives. But I remember I said that to someone at work once whilst I was in games. And just because I could see they were being stressed out and stuff, and they're a game designer. And they're like, the amount of times I've heard people say that the games that I've made have genuinely saved their lives, allowed them to escape or allowed them to connect with people.
Yes.
And that is the power of games. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I stand corrected. So I do love those player stories, and it's fantastic you can connect with that. Yeah, and
thank you.
Hey, I was gonna say as well, you've mentioned you're in partnerships. Now, there's gonna be people listening to this podcast episode that have no idea what partnerships is or what that job does or why it's valuable to a company. So could you give an overview of that? Like, how would you describe what someone who works in partnerships does?
Definitely. When I was at Bumble, any type of partnership was sort of running through our team, but there's so many different types of partnerships. There's marketing partnerships, to make sure you can exchange marketing value. There's product partnerships. You can work with a partner to work on import, you know, using their SDKs or using their APIs. We've done some of those. There were distribution partnerships. So I did this also at King, where you work with the App Store team, Google Play Store, any other distribution platform that you want to have your game or app on. So when I was at King, we also worked with the Samsung Galaxy team, Amazon App Store team at the time, Microsoft Windows. We also worked with Asian distribution platforms, including NetEase and Tencent. So there's a lot of different types of partnerships, to your point. There's also carriers you can work with, like AT&T and Verizon. So any type of partnership you can work with, any third party is working with a partnership. And then also making sure there's a lot of value, because there's value you can get from the partner on their marketing channels or their spend marketing. You can also put in marketing. So the whole goal of doing partnerships is almost like a 2 + 2 = 5, just to make sure there's actually added value to any partnership that you're working on, or distribution partnerships. You know, that's really important working with the App Store and Play Store teams as well.
Yeah, thanks. Great. Thanks for that overview. Because I think from the outside, it sounds like sales to some people, partnerships, but it's very, very much not, right?
Yes. I mean, it could be. That could be one component of partnerships, but there's so many different types of partnerships that you can do. So, you know, working with distribution platforms, that has nothing to do with sales. It's having your apps and games on the platform and like working with the partner managers on those platforms just to make sure, increase your game's visibility, or making sure there's programs you can be included, or product, making sure you're included in their product roadmap or launched product features as well. So we did a lot of work when I was at King and Bumble with the platforms.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And going back to that explanation of your career and how you've gone to King, I think it's great that you found that common thread going from, like I said, Disney and Paramount, the world of, like, you know, film and entertainment, through into gaming, specifically mobile gaming, and then into something like Bumble, which is, you know, a mobile app to find your, hopefully, your the one, the life partner. But you managed to find a common thread, and whereas I see those as like three very different industries. So do you feel like those companies are bound to have different cultures, but did you find that the different industries, let's say film, entertainment, gaming, and then tech, did have certain traits or cultures, cultural differences as well?
I mean, I think when I was in entertainment at the time, there was a bit of resistance to streaming platforms, like, you know, and also getting into streaming. Obviously now that's, you know, the biggest push across all the entertainment companies, but it's just interesting to go from entertainment and then to mobile gaming, where mobile was like the really big focus. And when I joined Candy Crush, it was at the height of Candy Crush. And that's actually when Candy Crush was very big on Facebook. And then, you know, they had already been pivoting to mobile. So that was the next, you know, big platform as well. And then same thing on Bumble, you know, getting onto mobile as well, that came out sort of changing sort of the dating dynamic as well.
Yeah, it's mad to think, looking back on it, thinking that how resistant a company like Disney would have been to streaming, but now Disney Plus, how huge that is. And also King, you know, experimenting with this new thing called mobile.
Exactly. Exactly. They had a small team because everything was focused on desktop web. And then they had a small team that was experimenting on mobile with a very Bubble Witch game, which is a very old game. But that was one of the first games that they put out on mobile to see what it was like on that new platform.
Great. And then going over to somewhere like Bumble, I was saying before I hit the record button here that whenever I think of Bumble, I think of it as being an incredibly mission-driven business about like why Whitney started the company in the first place, and it having a reputation for it being in a very inclusive culture. So how did you find that change going from somewhere in the world of gaming that is most typically like, say, mostly men and just into somewhere like Bumble that I'd imagine be quite different?
Yes, it's very different. So while I was at King, the majority of the company was men. And so it was 70-30 at the time. And then there was around 25 VPs. I think I was one of three female VPs. I'm in a lot of meetings. I would be like the only woman or person of color. And then going over to Bumble is a very big difference where, you know, the half the board is women. Majority of the VPs were also women as well. So it was a very big change for me. And so I really love how Bumble is really trying to build out an inclusive environment and culture. And then I, you know, was able to have a lot of learnings coming from King to Bumble as well. One of the things for me recruiting was really important to have a diverse workforce. And then at King, even though the company was 70-30, my team specifically was always around 50-50, so half women, half men. And so we made a really concerted effort when we did job descriptions and recruiting to make sure that we can reach all types of different candidates. So, you know, as we know, women only apply to jobs when they fulfill 90 to 100% of the requirements, and then men would apply if they fulfilled like 60%. So we tried to make sure we looked at the job descriptions, making sure, you know, when I was at Bumble, what was amazing, they used a tool called a gender decoder. So looking at the job descriptions and making sure that there were no subtle linguistic biases towards men. So making sure we can sort of adapt and making sure they're open and inclusive as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And I've also used the gender decoders, and I really advocate for them because it's such a really simple way to just have inclusive language as an external bit of employment branding, and also just actually useful for bringing in a more balanced workforce. Again, we were talking about this before the record button was pressed, but there's a free one out there for anyone listening called, if you type in gender decoder Catmut Field, it's great. Highlights feminine language, masculine language, and the whole purpose of that is that women tend to apply to ads that have more feminine language, and men, it doesn't seem to make any difference. So you're always better off writing feminine coded job ads. That's just like the hack there. But going back to then that experience, you're saying like it was a cultural change, right? Going into Bumble with this. I'm assuming positive change.
Yes. And yes. Positive. Yeah. Yes. But very big adjustment. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And what would you say then is like the big advantage then of having a more balanced team? Like, how did that actually play out when it came to things like meetings and decision making and hiring? Like, what were the knock on, say, positive effects there?
Yeah, I think just having diverse opinions, being aware of biases as well. So a lot of the times, we also, you know, reminded people how to run effective meetings, just to make sure in the meetings, not the most senior person spoke right away. Because once the most senior person speaks, then everyone sort of agrees with that person's ideas and feedback. So we also, recommended for everyone to go around the room, or making sure there's a more equitable way for everyone to share feedback. There's also ways to support people who have more introverted ways of sharing feedback. They may not want to share a feedback during the meeting. They may want to email feedback afterwards. That was also another way. We want to encourage different ways of communicating. We also really wanted to remind people that women are 3 times more likely to get interrupted during meetings, right? So making sure people are aware of interrupting or mansplaining behaviors. And then also whoever sets up the meeting, that they should send out an agenda beforehand, make sure there's a set agenda, what the goal of the meeting is, what the topics will be about. And then also that person who set up the meeting, they should also be taking all the notes and then sending out notes and recap after the meeting. So making sure, a lot of the women get assigned non-managerial tasks such as note taking, or a lot of tasks that don't get taken into account for like promotions. So making sure whoever sets the meeting, they should be running the meeting, and then making sure it's organized and structured during the meeting as well. And then afterwards, there's clear next steps and action items for everyone.
Yeah, I love that, because it is purely just an education exercise.
Yes.
that can have a massive, massive positive knock-on effect throughout the entire business. Like, I think about some feedback I've received in my career, like, sometimes being too bullish with putting up my hand. I am never very afraid of putting up my hand and voicing my opinion, right? But if you're not, told or trained, or, if you're just going in there with your default, and then you are easily interrupting people, or you're stepping over people, even if you have good intentions, unless you're actually trained on that and those ideas are brought to you that you may have never heard before, then you'll never be adapting your language or your communication effectively. So it is just as simple as, by the way, women get interrupted 3 times as much, or the plenty of the examples that you gave there. I love that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So you've been in vice president and SVP and leadership positions for quite a while now. So, like, how have you adapted these lessons to your own leadership style and how you lead teams or coach, mentor, manage your own reports?
Yes, I think for myself, one thing I did at King, because there were so few other women VPs, you know, we sort of made a pact where before any leadership or executive meeting, we would support each other in those meetings. So, you know, if I said something, someone would say, oh, you know, Olivia made a great point. So sort of following up and to continuously, you know, making sure the conversation flowed. So I think there were things that we could do as senior women is to support each other. We also made sure that we can mentor more junior women as well. So there were sessions that we ran in the different King offices. So in London and in Stockholm, we would have panels of the senior women and the sort of invite everyone to come, you know, listen to our panels or have like smaller lunches with the junior women as well for them to ask questions or get to know us. So there were different things that we could do to support each other and then also to support the more junior women while at King. And I think, as I mentioned before, some of the ways if you lead effective meetings is to make sure everyone can get a voice or opinion as well. So making sure junior people can also share their opinions and feedback. And, you know, when I was at King, more of the junior people were women. So making sure that they also give an opportunity to share their ideas and feedback as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love that. And also, I saw a lot of that was that EA. I think EA does a fantastic job at really promoting these inclusive practices and also really encouraging like people in leadership to be like directly hands-on with those who perhaps also just want that visibility and to be able to like aspire to also being in the same positions and also coaching that next cohort for the future. So I love that. Do you have any advice then? So for, I guess, in terms of the world of being remote and being visible and mentoring from others, like I work remote full time now, and I know you've like taken advantage as well of working remotely. I think there's been a lot of discussion around, because you're not all in the office together, if you're a bit more introverted or quiet or not seen as much anyway, that gets magnified now that you're working remotely. So do you have any advice for people who are working remote but still trying to I guess excel and be visible and progress?
Yeah, I think I saw some research how remote work has actually helped women because it sort of becomes like a more equitable environment for meetings. So I would recommend, you know, if there's any thoughts you want to share, maybe prepare beforehand for a meeting, or you can send them before the meeting, or you can send them after the meeting or during the meeting, whatever you feel comfortable to share. But I would also prepare for some key meetings to share your feedback, right? Making sure you're still visible, even though you're not in the office. I would also say making sure a lot of meetings I've seen, a lot of people use like the raise hands motion as well, just to make sure it's more equitable instead of people just all speaking at once. So I think also setting clear guidelines during remote meetings is, hey, you know, let's make sure you use the, you know, raised hand so everyone can get an opportunity to speak. I would also, what I mentioned is for like sending out agendas, sending out notes and action items or, meeting notes as well. I think that's another way to stay visible as well. And also, you know, share any feedback or thoughts you have on any of the Slack channels or groups that you have. So making sure that you're continuously visible through the ways that you can, even though you're working remotely. So that's still another way to, you know, show everything that you've been working on or you're thinking about.
Yeah. And I love the example that you gave earlier about like having your allies going into a meeting with you too.
Yes, like yes.
Ahead of time, you've got your friends or your allies and been like, hey, ahead of this meeting, I would love it if you could just advocate for me or my ideas, or at least advocate in the rule setting for this meeting at the beginning. That'd really be helpful to ensure this is a fair meeting where we can all voice our opinions. I really love that tactic as well.
Yeah, definitely. You can also, if you feel comfortable, ask your manager as well. I've done that as well, where before a big meeting, I've asked my manager, hey, I need some air cover. I need you to help me support me in that meeting. I need, you know, be, and I would just give my manager a heads up and he said yes and was able to support me. That's also another way to make sure you have support and then do a bit of preparation before going into the meeting so you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And so everything that you've learned from then, I guess, the most recent times were King and Bumble, how would you then apply that to whatever you plan to do next? Like, what are the things that you're going to be really looking for in your next opportunity, whether it's culture or values or even products? Like, how are you going to take those learnings into whatever's going forward for you?
Yes, I think for me, it's still important to work in areas or industries where it makes a positive impact on people's lives. So I think wherever I want to go, you know, making sure it does that, you know, it could be intersection of gaming or entertainment. But I think that's really important for me, is to making sure there's a clear positive impact on people's lives. And I think for culture, it's just to make sure it's an open, transparent culture, but also very inclusive. I think, you know, coming from King and from Bumble as well, I've learned quite a bit about how to make sure to building inclusive environments. And you see the rewards of having inclusive environments. You definitely see the rewards and impact that it can have.
Yeah, brilliant. And so, hey, before we head on to the final question that I ask everybody, is there anything that you really wanted to say today, or any points that you wanted to make that we haven't quite got to yet?
I would say for a lot of women, and especially women in gaming, you know, there's a lot of different, just continuously, you know, find ways to support yourself or find allies or, you know, sit at the table. You know, that's, you know, some of the things from Lean In as well. But like, I would just say continue. There's little tactics that you can do as well before meetings that I would do throughout my career, just to sort of get myself ready and build my own self-confidence and sort of try to beat imposter syndrome as well. I think that's a really key factor amongst women as well, just to keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, thanks for that. The final question I'd ask here is, what's your favorite interview question?
One of my favorite interview questions is, especially dealing with third parties and partners, tell me about a time where you've had to work on a big project or work on a project with a partner and some unexpected challenge came up. Tell me about a time how you've had to pivot or adapt, or, you know, how did you sort of figure out how to handle that situation and what was the result?
Yeah, I love that. In fact, I run interview training for the founders in our investment portfolio. And I'm always saying, like, past performance is the best predictor of future success.
Yes.
And so rather than asking hypothetical, oh, if this came up, how would you handle it? That instead be like, tell me about a time where this came up and how did you handle it? Yeah. So what would you say is, two questions. What would you say is the very best answer to that question for you? And also, what would be the worst? Like, what would be a red flag to hear in that answer?
I think to what you mentioned earlier, the best way to answer that question is actually to have a specific example of what you've gone through. How did you handle it? How did you pivot? How did you sort of remediate the situation? Or was there like a make good from the partner? What did you learn? I think that's also really important. What did you learn going forward for future partnerships or future projects? I love learning about that, is like, what was the retro retrospective on that project? I think a red flag is if they don't have any specific experiences, or it's very high level, or very general. I think that's a red flag for me, because it's really important to be able to go through that experience and learn and sort of how to get some takeaways from that as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. If you want to be able to show that you have a learning mindset, you're intellectually curious, and hey, if you're prepared for the interview, just at a very basic level as well. So fantastic. Olivia, we are coming up to the end here. So I just wanted to say, yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me. I loved hearing about your career going from the world of film and entertainment into games, then into Bumble, the world of mobile apps and tech. Really excited to see what's coming next, of course. But yeah, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.